Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg became the first woman to lie in state in the U.S. Capitol.
And the name of the nominee to replace her is leaked in advance of the president's formal announcement.
I'm Lulu Garcia Navarro.
And I'm Scott Simon, and this is Up First from NPR News.
We'll take a look at Amy Coney Barrett, the conservative judge expected to be nominated to replace Justice Ginsburg.
And the latest on COVID vaccine trials, what looks promising, and why the approval process takes so long.
And in Louisville, Kentucky this week, ongoing protests after the grand jury did not indict any of the three officers involved in the killing of Breonna Taylor. We'll have what's next in that case.
So stay with us. We've got the news you need to start your weekend.
This message comes from NPR sponsor 3M, working to improve lives through innovation and action. Learn how 3M is helping the world respond to COVID-19 at 3M.com/COVID. 3M science, applied to life. This message comes from NPR sponsor Twilio, a customer engagement platform trusted by millions of developers, enabling you to reinvent how you connect with your customers. Whatever your use case, Twilio has your back. It's time to build. Visit Twilio.com.
In death, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg broke two more barriers. She became the first woman and the first Jewish person to lie in state at the U.S. Capitol.
A small group of lawmakers and friends gathered to remember the justice on Friday.
Only a few hours later, word began to leak about the woman who might replace Ginsburg, Judge Amy Coney Barrett.
NPR's national justice correspondent Carrie Johnson joins us. Carrie, thanks for being with us.
Happy to do it, Scott.
And let us begin with that memorial to Justice Ginsburg. Short, very memorable and moving. What stands out to you?
You know, Rabbi Lauren Holtzblatt talked about the justice's lifelong commitment to justice. Let's take a listen.
Justice did not arrive like a lightning bolt, but rather through dogged persistence. All the days of her life, real change, she said, enduring change happens one step at a time.
The rabbi described how Justice Ginsburg worked case by case to fight gender discrimination earlier in her career, and that ultimately made it possible for women to get credit cards in their own names and for men with young kids to get Social Security benefits when their wives died. Really, she changed the world for all of us. And believe it or not, Scott, in the midst of all this solemn ceremony, there was a moment of surprise. Justice Ginsburg's personal trainer paid his respects by doing three push-ups right in front of her casket. And the justice's friends tell me she would have loved that.
And of course, as you reported last night, President Trump is reportedly set to nominate Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the bench. What's the latest?
Yeah, the announcement's supposed to come tonight from the White House, and people closely following the pick say it is Judge Coney Barrett, though they caution this president is idiosyncratic. He possibly could still change his mind. You know, Barrett is a judge already on the Seventh Circuit Appeals Court. She's a protege of the late Justice Antonin Scalia, who was President Trump's favorite justice. And Amy Coney Barrett was a law professor at Notre Dame before all that. She's 48 years old and could serve on the bench for decades. She's also the mother of seven kids and a devout Catholic, and she has taken a dim view of abortion rights in the past, which is certainly going to come up if she is nominated and gets a hearing.
Of course, we're just 38 days from the election. Voting has already begun in a number of states. Is there enough time for the Senate to confirm the nominee or not?
I think there is enough time. Sources close to the process say they're setting up meetings with senators and the nominee next week. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham really wants to move fast. He thinks the hearings could start the week of October 12th, and it's possible there could be a confirmation right around or right after the election, because only two Republican senators, Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, had wanted to delay the vote. And Scott, as we know, Justice Ginsburg's granddaughter had told Arnina Totenberg that Justice's most fervent wish was to wait for the next president to be installed and replace her. But that does not seem to be in the cards.
And of course, the Supreme Court begins its new term really in just a few days in October. Will they go ahead and hear cases with just eight justices?
They will go ahead. That's what happened in the recent past after Justice Scalia died. And, you know, one of the first cases the new court is going to hear concerns the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. It's possible that they decide to proceed with that case or that Chief Justice John Roberts might ask the court to wait and hear it once a new justice is confirmed. Remember, if the court does deadlock 4-4, it's as if the Supreme Court never touched the case and the lower court decision would stand.
NPR National Justice Correspondent Carrie Johnson, thanks so much.
Thank you.
There's been a lot of news this week about COVID-19 vaccines.
Two companies announced the launch of large-scale clinical trials. Another large trial remains on hold, and the White House has suggested that federal regulators may be intentionally slowing down the approval process for a vaccine.
NPR's Joe Palca is here to help us sort through all this and tell us where matters stand with a COVID-19 vaccine. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, let's start with the vaccine approval process. What has to happen before a vaccine can be widely distributed? And why does the president say members of his own administration are blocking him for political reasons?
Well, the role of approving the vaccine comes to the Food and Drug Administration, and they typically do that with advice from independent experts. And under normal circumstances, you'd expect that process to take up to a year or more. But there is a mechanism called the Emergency Use Authorization, which allows you to approve something without all the I's crossed or maybe and T's dotted and maybe not all the data that you'd like because it's an emergency and they need it. But FDA Commissioner Stephen Hahn has been saying any decision about that will be based on science. But the president has been saying that he'd like an answer by the end of October, before the election as it happens. And Hahn isn't making any promises. So there's been these hints that maybe he's doing that because he doesn't want the election to turn out one way or the other.
Not hints. I mean, allegations, right?
President has been saying pretty much straight out, I think there might be a cabal over there trying to thwart me.
And there's no proof of that. But why does it take so long to determine whether a vaccine works?
Well, it's not like a drug. I mean, when you're sick, you give people a drug and you wait a few days or weeks. And if they get better, then you know your drug is working. But with a vaccine, first of all, you get the shot. You have to wait a few weeks for immunity to develop to protect you from infection or from getting sick. Then you have to wait for enough people to get exposed in a trial. I mean, you're going to give people shots, but you don't want them to run out and be reckless. So you have to wait until circumstances come along that expose them to the virus. And third of all, if you think about it, I mean, you want to know if a vaccine works for 2 months or 3 months, you kind of have to wait 2 months or 3 months to see if people are getting infected or not.
Okay, two more vaccine candidates are starting wide-scale testing. Tell us about those.
Well, one is made by Janssen Pharmaceuticals, which is part of Johnson & Johnson. It's based on another vaccine the company developed to treat or to prevent Ebola. 30,000 people are being involved in the United States, 60,000 around the world. A major advantage of this vaccine is it's a single-dose vaccine. Two doses present all kinds of logistical challenges. The other is a vaccine made by Novavax. It's a company that doesn't have much of a track record, but preliminary data has looked good, and that trial will be starting in the UK with 10,000 people. And you have to remember, with a large trial, the other thing you learn is not only does the vaccine work, but you can also sometimes see side effects that wouldn't have turned up in one of the smaller initial trials.
Joe, we're at 7 million COVID cases in the United States. It's possible that even when a vaccine is available, many people will refuse to take it. What's behind that?
Well, in the near term, people have expressed concern, again, that this notion that somehow the vaccine is being rushed through and that that corners will be cut and that safety issues won't be properly addressed. On the other hand, there's people who in the longer term just aren't convinced that vaccines work very well or that this one won't be as efficacious as they'd like it to be. So there's been objections. But one thing you can say for sure, no vaccine works if you don't take it.
That's NPR's Joe Palca. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
In Louisville this week, protests continue with renewed anger and frustration after a grand jury and the Kentucky Attorney General declined to charge three police officers in the killing of Breonna Taylor.
For months, protesters across the country have been saying her name ever since Breonna Taylor, a black woman, was killed by police when they stormed her apartment looking for drugs they did not find. On Wednesday, the grand jury indicted just one of the three officers for reckless endangerment connected to the raid which led to her killing.
NPR's Adrian Florido is with us. He's been covering these protests and developments on the ground in Louisville. Good morning.
Good morning, Lulu.
A lot has happened in just a few days. The state investigation into Breonna Taylor's death is now closed. Why no charges or further legal action against the officers involved directly in her death?
Well, Kentucky's Attorney General Daniel Cameron said there simply was no legal basis for charging the officers with her killing. Listen to what he said earlier this week.
Justice is not often easy, does not fit the mold of public opinion, and it does not conform to shifting standards. It answers only to the facts and to the law.
And he said the officers obtained a warrant. He said evidence showed that they announced themselves before busting through Breonna Taylor's door. Although, Lulu, that is a point of disagreement, since many neighbors said they did not hear the officers yelling out that they were the police. And he said that when officers opened fire inside the apartment, it was in response to a shot fired at them by Taylor's boyfriend, who said that he thought the police were intruders. Nonetheless, the attorney general said the police had a right to defend themselves.
As we've seen, protesters in Louisville have been out in force since this announcement. What reactions have they been sharing with you?
They're furious, as you can imagine. They consider this a grave miscarriage of justice. Listen to this protester, Arvell Collins, who I spoke with the night after the attorney general's announcement.
Hey, man, it's because it's wrong. Black people go to jail every day for the shit they do. The police don't go to jail for the shit they do. But we out here for what's right.
And one thing that many protesters were also angry about was that the only charges filed were against that one officer whose bullets entered the apartment of Taylor's neighbors, endangering their lives. This is Kim Rent-Young.
They are the ones that are getting justice right now, like the walls of other people's apartments instead of her. And she's the one that's actually been murdered. It's a slap in the face, and we are not taking it no more.
Breonna Taylor's family appeared at a press conference yesterday. What did they have to say about the lack of charges?
Breonna Taylor's aunt read a statement on behalf of Breonna Taylor's mother, saying that the decision had just reaffirmed the family's lack of faith in the justice system. And Lulu, because the grand jurors declined to charge the officers based on evidence that was presented to them by the attorney general's office, the family issued a new demand yesterday. This is Benjamin Crump, one of the family's attorneys, speaking at that press conference yesterday.
We are standing here today demanding that he release the transcripts of the grand jury proceedings so we can know if there was anybody giving a voice to Breonna Taylor.
But the attorney general has so far resisted releasing those transcripts.
Adrian, the attorney general was very clear that no further charges will be brought against the officers in this case. So what happens next?
Well, it seems that the family plans to keep putting pressure on the AG to release those transcripts. There is also an ongoing federal investigation looking at whether police violated Breonna Taylor's civil rights. And, of course, protesters say that they're going to remain in the streets. They've protested almost every day since Taylor was killed back in early March. And they say that they don't plan to stop.
That's NPR's Adrian Florido in Louisville. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lulu.
And that's up first for Saturday, September 26th, 2020. I'm Lulu Garcia Navarro.
And I'm Scott Simon. Up First is back Monday with the news you need to start your week. Follow us on social media. We're at Up First on Twitter. And please keep an eye on this feed for the occasional special episode.
And for more news, interviews, and fun, you can find us on the radio.
Weekend edition, Saturday and Sunday mornings. You can find your local NPR station at stations.npr.org.
Radio Ambulante is NPR's only Spanish-language podcast. Listen for stories you won't hear anywhere else, told by the voices that make Latin America come alive. Each week, we bring you another remarkable story that will surprise and move you. Radio Ambulante. New episodes every Tuesday. Listen and subscribe.